Theme of this evening's shiur is deathbed wishes, and the truth is that there are actually two halakhic categories which relate to this phenomenon, and we'll see that the Rishonim actually asked the question about why the need for two, but one which is some familiar is known as Divrei Shchiv Mira, that somebody's on the deathbed. So something that they say is Kimsurim Dami, is as if it was already the act of Kinyan took place. And that's an interesting halacha, which we will not be directly focusing on at all, other than at the end of this year, perhaps, to see how the Rishonim distinguish that from the primary topic, which will be a halacha known as Mitzvah Lakayim Divrei Hames. There's a mitzvah to carry out the wishes of one who has passed away. And of course, the connection, there are two possible connections we'll see, two connections in the Parsha, again, really all from the same story, but there's two different psukim. The first is right in the beginning of the Parsha in Perek Mem Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Yaakov brings Yosef to him, Vayomer, and he tells him, Hishavali, you should swear to me, V'yishvalo, and he swore to him, Yishtachu Yisrael Rosh HaMitah. Yaakov has just told Yosef, I want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, Kivrei Avosai, in Maris HaMachpelah, and he makes Yosef take a shvua that he will listen. And in fact, when he actually dies in Perek Nun, on Pasuk Yud-Beis, the Torah tells us, Yesu Banavlo, Kain Ka'asher Tzivam. Yaakov had commanded the brothers, obviously Yosef, by extension the brothers, to bury him in Eretz Yisrael, and in fact they listened to this.
So it wouldn't have been enough just to say it, if the significance is the fact that he was dying, why did he have to let him swear?
So Shabsi, not planted or pre-rehearsed or orchestrated, asks the question, which I want to immediately address. Shkoyach. So I want to, before getting into the general lumdusha question of how do you understand mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames, and there's what to say about that, but I want to focus, as we sometimes do, it's not always possible, but whenever possible I try, to focus to whatever extent we can, some halakhic thing in the actual story. So let's start with that, and I'll phrase the question a little differently, but I think it'll ultimately come to the answer of the question, and that's as the poskim and rishonim do, based on the famous gemara in the Darim on Daf Ches Amud Aleph, where we're told that nishpa l'kayim es mitzvah is essentially a meaningless shvua. To take a shvua that says, I'm going to fulfill a mitzvah, it doesn't do anything. Mushpa ba'omed bihar Sinai. What happens to say that if you take a neder to fulfill a mitzvah, so that works, and why a neder should be different than a shvua is a very fascinating concept, but a shvua to fulfill a mitzvah is a meaningless shvua, because we're all already mushpa ba'omed bihar Sinai. We're all, so to speak, sworn in to fulfill all mitzvos. And therefore, perhaps the question really should be asked, why is it necessary b'chlal? After all, l'cha ora, to fulfill the desire of Yaakov would be a fulfillment of mitzvah kibud av va'em. If that's the case, why the need for the extra shvua? So the truth is that the mefarshim on the Chumash try to address what the purpose of the shvua was. And we'll focus on the Ramban. The Ramban gives two explanations, perhaps, for what the need for the Shvua was. The first, which is also echoed by the Svarno and the Arachayim, is that Ein Hachanami, there was no need, Kibud Av Va'em, Mitzvah L'Kayim, whatever you want to call it, of course they had to do it. So what was the purpose of the Shvua? It was for Paro. If you just go and say, no, it's the right thing to do, my father wanted it, so perhaps Yosef feared that Paro would not be impressed. But if he says, listen, what could I do? I took an oath that I will do it. Apparently, that would have swayed Paro. And that was therefore why it was done. It was really not halachically significant. It had more to do with the inner trappings of Paro's court and how it would work. If that's the case, then of course we understand that's the answer to our question, at least, which is Ein Hachanami. It wasn't needed. The halacha, without the shvua, would have been sufficient to obligate the children to listen. However, the Ramban does give a second answer, which is very fascinating. I'm not exactly sure what he means, but he says that the shvua here added a greater sense of urgency and hishtadlus. In other words, maybe there was a mitzvah to do it anyway, by taking the Shvuah, even if that didn't have the full, it sounds like to me, didn't have the full tokef of a Shvuah, after all the Gemara says a Shvuah doesn't work when there's a mitzvah. But you took a Shvuah to do it. Again, it's very similar to the first pshat. Just the first pshat sounds like that's what can, that would give the certain sense of urgency to Paro. The second pshat is, no, that's what gave the certain, you can imagine, you know, it's going to be a big schlep. Brothers had a complicated relationship with their father before he blessed them. Certainly after he blessed them, I can imagine certain brothers being better moods than other brothers after that moment. So maybe they wouldn't have necessarily been also excited. So the Shvuah, the Ramban says in the second answer, is to give a certain greater urgency to the case. But if that's true, then the question from the Gemara is still an open one, and I'm not sure according to that answer if there is a good answer. As a parenthetical remark, not to get too lost in Hilchos Shvuos, but the question of how that Ramban Torah relates to the Shitas HaRambam is actually an open question. The Rambam in Hilchos Shvuos has a famously enigmatic and ambiguous approach to this whole idea. This is in Hilchos Shvuos and Perakei Hilchot Tazayin. The Rambam says that if you make a Shvuah for a mitzvah, you're not over on a Shvuas Bitui, but Yirali Shehuloke Mishum Shvuas Shav. What exactly does that mean? So there's a debate, but that debate actually in the Mefarshim centers around a famous and important Shitas HaRan. The Ran in the Gemara in Nedarim actually says that it's not so simple. When the Gemara says that a Shvuah on a mitzvah is meaningless, it's not true. What it means is that there would be no Chiyuv Karbon because of the Shvuah. But if you didn't do the mitzvah, let's say, not only did you mevatel the mitzvah, but the Ran says you were over on Bayachel also. So it doesn't have the full force of a regular Shvuah, but there is some essence of a Shvuah on a mitzvah according to the Ran. And the Radvaz and the Rashash, actually, struggle in that ambiguous line of the Rambam to know, is he trying to hold like the Ran? Is he another Shita? And again, all of this about to what extent do Shvuos on mitzvos have any impact or some impact, and perhaps this relates to the palace intrigue and the Perushim and the Ramban al Torah, are all, again, centered around this idea of to what extent there was an independent mitzvah for the brothers to listen to Yaakov, and if there was, so then what was the role of the Shvuah? You're talking about a Shvuah or the mitzvah l'chaim
d'vei meis? In this case, the Shvuah. The point is that Yaakov wants to show
how significant
it is to him, and therefore it makes Shvuah, or the point is that
my impression is the latter. Is that will have that, yeah, that again, that again, according to the first opinion of the Ramban, it's neither. According to the first opinion of the Ramban, it's just to convince Paro. But according to the second approach in the Ramban, the way I understand it, it's not for Yaakov, or even to show what Yaakov thinks. It's to make sure the brothers, the children, take it very seriously. A final answer, which will become perhaps relevant at the end of this year in another independent halacha context, but if it were true, it's relevant in this case as well, that is that there are some poskim, like the Shvas Yaakov and the Tashbates, that say that mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis is only limited to money. As you can order your finances. But all sorts of other family planning that the patriarch might be interested in doing. So whether or not that works, that would be for other types of shiurim, not for tonight. But that's not the part of mitzvah l'chaim divrei hameis. Mitzvah l'chaim divrei hameis is that he has certain financial wishes that he should be followed, and those should be followed, nothing else. So if that's the case, so then the Minchas Asher in Siman Samach Vav says that would also explain why Yaakov needed to make the brothers swear, because mitzvah l'chaim divrei hameis would have been insufficient. It would have been if Yaakov had said, "Do me a favor, I have some. If you look under the hidden panel under my bed, or under the mattress, I kept some money. And do me a favor, give some to the nurse. She took so good care of me." And the brothers might have been thinking, "Hey, who wants to give away part of that Yerusha? Let's keep it to ourselves." Mitzvah l'chaim hameis, says the Tashbates, you have to give. If the Niftar says something in a monetary way, you have to act that. But what's that got to do with where to bury him? We'll decide where to bury him. He would like it one way. Okay, but that's not mitzvah l'chaim divrei hameis according to these poskim. So that's where the Shvuah comes in. Now, again, the question is, and if you'll say that there's no mitzvah to listen, so then you don't have the problem from the Gemara and the Darim either, because there's no mitzvah on a there's no Shvuah on a mitzvah because there was no mitzvah.
Here's Kibbutz.
So that good. So you guys, that was perfect. So the next thing I wanted to mention, which relates a little bit, we mentioned it in passing last week, is the Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, which describes a concept of Kibud Avaim La'achar Misa. Now, first of all, there's a question whether that's, if I'm not mistaken, there's a question whether that's Midaraisa or not. I think we assume that's Midarabanan. So perhaps that's relevant. But furthermore, Rabbi Akiva Eger points out in a tshuva in Simon Saman Ches, that if you look carefully at that Gemara, you see, and again, perhaps this is relevant to Midaraisa Darabanan, but that fundamentally, Kibud Avaim after death is a fundamentally different mitzvah and different hagdara. The example where the Gemara describes this, and which it then says, mitzvah b'chaim, mitzvah even after Misa, one says, what is kibbutz during a lifetime? It's a classic example. Father asks you to get him a cup, a drink, so you go get him a drink. What is the Gemara's one example? I believe it's the only example the Gemara ever gives for mitzvah of kibbutz avayim la'achar mitzvah. You say, hareini kaparas mishkava. So in a broader sense, and Rabbi Kiva Eger develops this idea, you see that the idea of kibbutz avayim in the lifetime of the parents has to do with taking care of their needs. Perhaps that expresses something deeper, but on a practical level, what does the mitzvah entail? It entails, that's what kibbutz does. Maybe mora is something different, but that's what kibbutz entails. As opposed to the mitzvah of kibbutz la'achar mitzvah, so there he says, it's not so much about that, because obviously they don't have any more actual needs, but rather it's about maintaining kavod. It's about still seeing oneself in the relationship to the parent, even la'achar mitzvah, instill in that role of significant unequals, of a certain level of respect that you have to have for them and a certain kavod. Rabbi Kiva Eger then at the end says, well, maybe Mora requires certain things after Misa. He's not clear about that. That's a separate discussion. But perhaps, again, I was thinking of this Rabbi Kiva Eger, especially in light of our question, which is why I was hedging until now, but your perceptive listener caught me, which is that, again, what was the chiva of the brothers to listen to Yaakov? Was it kibbutz avaim? So it's not clear. It's not clear if that would apply in such a case. Again, first of all, perhaps on some level it was only midrabbanan, which came sometime later, so maybe it wasn't chal then. And even if it was a daraisa, or even conceptually, perhaps it doesn't apply to things like that, lachar misa. As opposed to, so that's why I was hedging a little bit on whether kibbutz avaim in theory should have been the chiva on the brothers. But certainly, again, and this is really, I guess, a segue now to the real issue I want to talk about, which is l'chora, there is this idea of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames.
Isn't there an opinion in the Rishonim that the avos were only obligated to keep the mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael?
Yes, that's the Ramban.
And since this took place in Mitzrayim, maybe all these mitzvah aspects would not have applied.
And Echanami, according to the Ramban, you don't have asked. None of these shurim work according to the Ramban.
But the mitzvah sifrit
thing. Does the Ramban make that distinction, though?
Well,
no, I'm saying there are people. I've mentioned, I think, in the past, maybe even in the shurim, that there's an etziv. And a number of, I think it's an etziv, yeah. The etziv says it about Goyim, which is a chiddush, it's not pashut. But I think they also say this about the avos, that, certainly about Goyim, that perhaps when we say they have seven mitzvahs or something like that, that's only in the non-ethical or rational mitzvos. But those, to be a mensch, the Netziv says that's obligatory on Goyim. It's not in one of the seven mitzvos of Bnei Noach. It didn't have to be. The seven are above and beyond. So perhaps that's relevant. The Shailas, who said you have to bury your father where he wants to be, if you don't do that, you're not a mensch? I don't think that's true. No. We alluded to that last week, but again, maybe Yisro or something, or Veskanan will do the actual mitzvah of Kibbutz Avaim. So that's a debate. That's a debate in the Gemara. But let's get into now the actual topic of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames, because until now it's a little bit of an introduction, so to speak. So the Medrash HaGadol focuses again not on this pasuk. We started this year by quoting two pesukim, but actually quotes the pasuk in Perek Nun, again pasuk Yud-Beis, in which you see the fact that they made and take a shvuah. First of all, if anything, the shvuah shows that there was nothing pre-existing. But leave that aside for a moment. So they took a shvuah. So what? Who said they did it? So that's why the Medrash picks up on the pasuk in Perek Nun, pasuk Yud, v'yasu bonav lo kein ka'asher tzivam. Why do they do it? Because this is, they were commanded to do it from the father. And says the Medrash HaGadol on that pasuk, this is the makor. It's not clear if it's 100% it's daraisa or it's machta, but this is the makor for the idea of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. This idea is found, I think it's in two gemaras. There's a Gemara in Ksubas and Daf Ayin and Aleph, but the main Gemara, the main text where the Rishonim and stuff discuss this, is usually connected to a Gemara in Gittin and Daf Yud Dalid Amud Beis. So the basic halachic question which I want to ask, and this will take us for the rest of the shir, is the following, which we'll see, I think, is implicitly and even explicitly in some Rishonim, but was, I think, perhaps first raised in a very sharp Lamdash way by the Machane Ephraim. The Machane Ephraim, one of the great Lamdash Svarim, say he has, again, this is not for now, but just as a brief caveat on methodology, but when, whether it's a Mefarish or a Rishon, or for that matter, you understand in a moment why the Rambam became the Av, the Binyan Av, I should say, for Lamdas, when somebody focuses not on, let's say, the Pshat of a Gemara, let's say, as it appears, a Perish, but rather puts things into conceptual categories, or halakhic categories, Hilchos X, Hilchos Y, so the very act of categorization is perhaps the Aleph Beis, or the bedrock of Lamdas, and certainly it is what enables Lamdas. So again, we have plenty of Sfarim which we use in the enterprise of Lamdas, which are not necessarily organized like that, but to take a sefer like the Machane Ephraim, that's exactly how the Machane Ephraim is organized. Yet it's not exhaustive, very rare of a halacha, it's not like the Rambam's Mishnah Torah or something, but it's basically his essays, but it's not a tshuva sfarim which we can utilize for Lamdas. He organizes it as Hilchos Chiyah Matana, Hilchos, etc., etc. So in fact, in this context, that's why it's such a very very wonderful sefer to use and learn in these contexts. So he asks the following question, more or less. When we say mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames, really there are two possibilities for what that means. One possibility is it's a mitzvah, but that's all it is. The father, before he dies, says, I want you to do this. Let's for now assume we're talking only about money. I want you to take this money. You know, I always meant to reap, to give that $1 million to my alma mater. You know, the Rebbe I had in fourth grade was so nice to me and everything I did until now because of them, but I never got around to it because their alumni affairs isn't so good, and that was the yeshiva, and I never got around to it. I want you to take this money, I want you to give it to them. So it's a mitzvah to do it. Mitzvah l'kayim de remes. But there's another possibility. Which could have serious halachic impact and would be much more ambitious. That is to say, it's not just that it's a mitzvah for the child to do it, that by the father's request, that already creates a certain extent a kinyan. Now, if that would be the case, again, and this will relate to the question which we will ask towards the end of this year. Why is it Xayla?
Suppose you don't listen.
We're going to get to it. But this will relate to the Shaila, which, again, there's still going to be differences, but certainly if you say the latter, so then I think it would make this very close to the idea of Divrei Shtiv Mira. The idea of Kiksuv Mumasurim Dam, which again is an idea of you get the kinyan without the act of the kinyan, basically. Again, one day maybe we'll have a shir on that. That's a very simple, simplistic one-liner for how does Divrei Shchiv Mira work. But Bapashtis, it means that you can get the effect of the kinyan without a Maisa kinyan. The guy's on his death, but how's he going to do Hagbah or Meshicha? So, he didn't write a shtar, so what? He's Divrei Shchiv Mira. But again, the focus of that whole category of Divrei Shchiv Mira is obviously the concept of kinyan. The shayla is this related or not? If you say it's just a mitzvah, it's not related at all. But perhaps, the Machane Ephraim says it's more than that. Perhaps there's already a certain type of a kinyan on this. So before we see some of the nafkaminas, even to just illustrate where perhaps this is already in some of the perhaps this is some of the Rishonim. Some example, the Ramban on this Gemara in Gittin discusses whether there's kfiyah. We're not going to discuss for a moment if the kids ignored it, then what do you do after the fact? But let's say they haven't decided yet. It's a lot of money, $1 million, to that yeshiva out there in Iowa that my father went to in second grade. You know, I can give him $10,000, but I don't want to give him $1 million. So, are we kofa? Right, the rabbi was there also doing the vidui. The rabbi heard it; he knows. So, does the bezdin come in? Especially the bezdin of Iowa is for sure going to come to want to be kofa. So, is there such a din? So, the Ramban discusses this. He says, well, the truth is that there's a halacha, that let's say a father dies in debt. So the halacha is that there's a mitzvah for the Yarshim to pay off that debt, but it's not obligatory. We would not be called for the Yarshim to do so. So the Ramban first says, you know, maybe this is no worse than that. He didn't have a debt to them, he wanted to give them a present. But this can't be worse than that, or better than that, however you want to call it. We're not forcing that, we're not going to force this. But he says, perhaps we should do kfiya. After all, kofin al hamitzvos. So the whole question and answer, the whole Shach HaMatari, if you look at that Ramban, seems like he's struggling, but whatever, even on both studim, it all seems to be suffused with the assumption that we're talking here about a mitzvah.
You're not talking about a shtar, are you?
No, not if you wrote a shtar. Not if you wrote a shtar.
It's a verbal instruction.
Yes, correct. Correct.
And then you have an issue of a chomesh. You don't have to get more than 20% for mitzvah.
Of your own money.
So let's say the father says...
Oh, so how does this relate to their Yerusha of that money?
Yeah.
Which, again, on a commonsensical or emotional level, we're all probably already thinking about. But on a halachic level, we'll see that. But Tosfos and Gittin there on Daf Yud Gimel Munav, that same Mishnah there, so this is all this halachic discussion comes off of a ratio of that Mishnah. But there was a Seifa in that Mishnah where it says that, I forget exactly the Lashon of the Mishnah where it says what the guy says, but the halacha of the Mishnah says is, Tnu la'achar misa. You're supposed to give it, you're supposed to... And the Tosfos asks, how come on that part of the Mishnah the Gemara doesn't say that that's a fulfillment of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis? It's only on the earlier part of the Mishnah. So Tosfos, again, I don't know if it's a starkest kasha, but the answer of Tosfos, which interests me, Tosfos answers that in this case, there is something which we'll get to also a little bit later to see it in itself. But Tosfos here says, well, there's this thing called the Shlish. Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis is only if you've given the money over to the third party. The lawyer has been holding it, and he's told to execute it after the death. You've given it over to a shlish. But in that case, in the Seifa, this case, there was no shlish. So we'll see if that's true or not. That'll be debated in Rishonim in a little bit. But what's important for us here is that the Toras Gittin, which is the Nesivis on the Gemara, so he says no, because the whole idea of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis is nothing more than a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to do it. But the lashon of the Mishnah there of Tnu, L'achar Mitzvah, sounded like there was already a kinyan. It was stronger than just a mitzvah. Perhaps that's why it wasn't relevant.
Why doesn't the halacha of Shchid Meirah apply to this question?
So, I alluded to before that there's the relationship between these two is going to be, it's asked by the Rishonim. We're going to see that. We will see that.
Well, supposedly that he wasn't a shemirah when he said
no. Okay, that's an easy answer. But the question is, might get more difficult for you. In a case where there's shemirah, why do you need both? Why do we need? Who said? But we do have both. So that's the Rishonim, and we're going to discuss that. But let's get to some nafkaminis, which I think will also really flesh this out, and we'll see both sides of the issue. So, for example, the Ran in Gittin wants to know, is this Chal, if Nebuch, this guy who died in a young age and he left young children? If the Yisomim are actually, if they're Katanim, if they're Yisomim, if they're under Bar Mitzvah. So are they obligated to do it or not? So the Ran says that Yisomim Katanim are not obligated at all by this, because Katanim are Shaykh to Mitzvahs. So, the Stei Chemed quotes the Marid El Ghazi and the Knesset HaGadola, who says, no, it doesn't apply to Ketanim. Why should there be any difference? Of course, it doesn't apply to Ketanim. And the Mefarshim point out that L'cha'ora, this debate is totally on our question. Because, to work backwards for a moment, if it is a Kinyan, so what's that got to do with whether the Ketanim are B'nai Mitzvah or not? Again, Kinyan means that if the father says, I want the money to go to the yeshiva in Iowa, so they already have a Kinyan in it. So who cares that the little boy, who perhaps is going to have to sign over the check, who cares that he's not Mechuyiv in the Mitzvah? Doesn't make a difference anymore. Memele, he has to do it because, I think the question was asked before, it would be almost a Shtickle Gezel. It's not his. That's what the Stechemet, and we'll see the Knesset HaGdolah, Lishitas, on a few other examples. But if you hold, it's only a mitzvah, but there is no monetary attachment. So the Shaila is, who's the mitzvah on? And if the mitzvah is on the children to listen, so, okay, but he's not going to be more mechuyiv to listen to this than he is to eat kosher. And if he's still not yet chayiv to eat kosher, so why should he be chayiv to do this mitzvah?
Maybe the thought is that the Kinyan takes place after death. That a possibility of the Kinyan takes place under the terms of
and therefore
will. Therefore, it's on the minor children.
Yes, that, and that's, again...
They don't have the obligation.
They don't... No, I'm saying, that would explain... Right. That would explain the Shita Zeder Chayiv. But the Ran says they're not. So L'Chaora, the only explanation for the Ran, again, it's almost basically, he almost says it explicitly, you just have to add a sentence or two. But he says, because they're not Chayiv in mitzvahs, which is another way of saying, because all this is a mitzvah. Interesting, that's interesting. But I think the assumption seems to be, and if I'm not mistaken, I think we'll see another echo of this also. The assumption seems to be that there, like, and we do have such concepts and parallels in other halachos, where there is a halachically critical moment. Everything is determined, l'kula or l'chumra, by Shas Misa. So if they're not chayiv then, then it's that, again, relating to, was it Shragi's comment before? So then they're Yoresh. Or it's, let's for now make this assumption that if there is some kind of a kinyan, so then that kicks in, that blocks the Yerusha on that part. Or even if there's a mitzvah to do it, perhaps, it at least impedes. Maybe they can ignore it. We'll see that in a moment. But if there's nothing, because they're not even chayiv the mitzvahs, so then they're Yoresh the money. Then they're Yoresh the money, and they never went to Iowa. They got brought up in Baltimore. They don't need to give the money. They don't need to give the money to Baltimore. Let's now get to that very question. Let's say, right, they go to the lawyer. Or for that matter, they need to go to the lawyer. The guy were on the deathbed. You know, they went in with the rabbi, and he says, you just know, I want you to give the money to the yeshiva in Iowa. So, listen, what are they going to say? You know, the heart sank. You know, here, after all, the children themselves middle-aged, and they've got all sorts of debts, and they're marrying off children, and they were thinking, all right, you know, coming into some money. And now dad wants to give us $1 million to Iowa? So they kind of just smile and nod their head. But when he dies, they're ready to ignore what he did. They want to go use the money and pay off the mortgage, go pay for the kid's wedding. So what happens in such a case? If they ignore, explicitly, directly, wantonly, ignore, they contravene the father's wishes. Mitzvah kind of remains, they don't care. It's their money now, they're not going to listen. So, the Ramah discusses this, and the Ramah says, if the Yisrael ignore the wishes of the father and sell, Masha Asa Asa. It's Chal. The sale is valid. It's up to them. They didn't listen, so maybe they have to do tshuva, but they don't, there's no chiyuv to listen. So the Ktsos quotes this Ramah.
Yeshiva couldn't come after them, because it was given to them?
It was never given to them. Oh, so that, exactly, because that's what the father wanted. If they could somehow prove that, I don't know what the story is in secular law, but according to the Ramah and Halacha, they wouldn't win. So I don't know, how from is yeshiva in Iowa? Do they go to Besen, or do they go to a secular court? I'm sure they'll figure out a way to get to secular court if it's more advantageous there.
Isn't there a difference between Staka and other types of Kinyanim, like Amir Ligavala, in the Sinrasa Lahedja?
So this would be stronger.
This is stronger. I think that...
Okay.
So
we're gonna see. We're gonna see. You're both right. You're both right that we're gonna see a Rambam. We're gonna see the discussion of that. But if you want, for the purpose of this sermon, we could make a different example. Stam, I had a buddy. We used to go to Shacharis every day for 30 years. We had herring and crackers together, and went to Mishnah Yomis together. And he's my buddy, and I know he could use some money. Give him some money. I want a token of my appreciation. So they, we'll send him a card. We'll keep the money for ourselves. He can speak at the funeral, but we're keeping the money. So the Ramah says it works. Comes along the Ktsos and says, you see, that this Ramah is based on the assumption that all it is a mitzvah. So if they want to be mevatel the mitzvah, they'll be mevatel the mitzvah. But if it would be a kinyan, so then in Beis Din, whether it's the yeshiva in Iowa or the herring buddy, would have a right to be able to come and say, I had a kinyan. They contravened it. It's a shtickle gezel. It's a shtickle gezel. Now, the truth is, it reminds me, I know many of you also go to Rabbi Reisman on Saturday nights, and he's very, very funny and has lots of stories, and I'm not that funny and don't know that many stories. But if I listen to some of his tapes, I get stories and can be a little funny. So I remember years ago, before there was any satellites or CD-ROMs, but I did once borrow a tape that somebody had about wills. Again, I'm not talking about wills. It's not tonight's topic. But he was discussing wills under Moshe Shita and different things. And the issue was, there was a case in Brooklyn. I think it was a Frum family. It was not one of his balabatim, but he had a friend who was the Rav of this family, where the father all died and just used the secular will, did not use any halachic wills, and left the money disproportionately to one side, or perhaps maybe just made it very equivalent. I got four kids, I divided it in four. You know, but the older son, Pishnayim, and apparently it was racking the family apart, just destroying them. So they went. I'm not getting the case exactly right, but the basic punchline, which I'm trying to get to, is they were trying to get whichever one of these was the crusading. I think it was one who was holding on to the money, and perhaps he was holding on to it incorrectly. I think, again, I don't remember if I said the case exactly right, but basically tried to explain to him, you know, do the right thing, you know, and he basically, Rabbi said, you know, he said, I'll do tshuva for this. I got tshuva to do for other things too, I'll do tshuva for this one, but I'm keeping the money. You know, and again, Rabbi Reisman there was using it as an example where you can't rely. Again, as I understand it, there aren't many batei din who would enforce, who would enforce halachically just a strictly secular will. Again, even though there's an opinion of Rav Moshe, but again, the purpose in the context of that tape literally was that he was illustrating even in such extenuating cases, the batei din that he was familiar with would not rely on that, and he was advising them for people to make halachically appropriate wills because you're setting up your family for tremendous machlokas. You can get the same exact result. You just have to fill out the right kind of a form with the right kind of a lawyer to... anyone here? Ari's here. So, okay, very good lawyers in the community. So you can get the same result, and he was saying you can't run. So again, it reminds me of this idea. Again, that's what the Tos and the Ramah are saying. You know what? Maybe they didn't do what the father wanted. Who knew? Or we'll do tshuva. We'll worry about it another time. They wanted to keep the money in lechaora. Whether they can do it or not, that depends on this question. If it's a kinyan, the Ksos says that Ramah, you wouldn't be able to hold like the Ramah. You would say they're wrong. The yeshiva in Iowa or the friend, whoever it would be, would have a case. But apparently, the Ramah holds is nothing more. It's nothing more than a mitzvah.
Is it tvar kinyan, or is it just a mitzvah in time to that
make? This is exactly the question.
The
what is a will? What is the status of a will? I'm not discussing that tonight. Whether a will, a secular will, has halachic status is not at all... Also not tonight's topic. Perhaps. Perhaps not. Not tonight's topic. Not at all tonight's topic. I'm not saying it's not related. It's just not tonight's topic.
I think it is a little bit because halachic will takes it out of it. Makes it a kinyan.
Right. Correct. I understand. I'm not saying it's not related. It's just not what we're talking about. Maybe we are.
How is a kinyan defined?
Yeah.
How's a kinyan defined? Just the dvarim that he says.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That's a special takana. That's a special. Very exactly. Oh, okay. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, davar shlomo yolam. We're gonna get. You mamish, you guys are on the ball. You just have to have a little patience. I'm mamish getting to it. I'm trying. We might not get to it, but I'm going to try. So let's see another case. The Rashi in Gittin discusses the following case. What if, by the time you find the intended Makabel, right, the guy you wanted, the dead father wanted to give it to his friend, the guy who had herring with him for 30 years. Nebuch, when the guy found out that his herring buddy died of 30 years, says, I'm chatzi neshama, how can I go on without my buddy to have herring every day? So he drops dead. The intended Makabel also dies. So Rashi says, in such a case, you have to give it to the Yarshim of the other guy. I mean, the Yarshim have to give it to the Yarshim. It automatically goes from the intended Makabel, our herring buddy, to their children. And Rabbi Kiva Eger doesn't understand this. Because Rabbi Kiva Eger says, I understand. The whole halacha is that it's a mitzvah. The mitzvah is to fulfill the guy's wishes. He wanted it to go to him, to the herring buddy. He hasn't seen those kids in 30 years. And when he used to see the kids, they used to untie his shoelaces and tie his talus together. He is not friends with the kids. He's friends with the father. That's all he wanted to do. So the Machane Ephraim says, the Chora Rukiv Eger's right. He says, no, because Rashi again holds that this is not just a mitzvah. This is a kinyan. And if at the moment the father died and the herring guy was still alive, he has a kinyan. And then when he dies, he was marish that to his kids. But if it would have just been a kinyan, again, it's all happening invisibly in a split second. But the halacha is like the super highway. It goes very fast, like a DSL line. No, it doesn't. Can happen mamash in a second. So it doesn't matter if it would be a focus of the mitzvah that you have to do it. So that Rabbi Kiva Eger L'Chara is right. All he wanted to do, if he wanted to fulfill his wishes, he wanted to give it to his friend, not to his kids. But if it's a kinyan, then once it goes to him, it automatically goes. It automatically goes even to the children, into the Yor Yorshim. So let's discuss now Rabbi Lentz's suggestion. The Machan Ephraim picks up on your question, and he quotes from the Mari Ben Leiv, who says the following: that the power of mitzvah l'kayim, devar hames, applies even to a davar she'ein bo mamish or a davar she'lo bo li'olam. Let's say a guy says, "And there's something being made for me, but it doesn't even exist yet. It's not specified. Davar she'ein bo mamish, davar she'lo bo li'olam, doesn't even exist yet, perhaps. Davar she'lo bo li'olam. But he's expecting it, and when it was going to come, he wanted it. Or perhaps he knew it was going. Maybe he knew it wouldn't come until he died. But he tells his kids, you know what? This is going to happen whenever. And when it does, I want you to give it, even if I'm already dead, I want you to give it to the person. So does it work or not? Can mitzvah l'kayim devar hames apply to davar she'lo bo li'olam? Says the Mari Ben Leiv, again, the Machan Ephraim quotes this, that in fact it does. Says it explicitly. And then the Machan Ephraim goes on to show from other Rishonim, maybe a Rif, maybe a Rashba, maybe a Mordechai, all holds perhaps that this should work. Furthermore, and this relates to, if not directly, at least similarly to what Aryeh mentioned before, also point out that the Rambam discusses the following. What if a person is no dare, a davar she'lo bo li'olam to tzedakah? So we said before, if a guy has debts, there's a mitzvah but no chiyuv for the children to pay those, repay those. What if he made a pledge? Right? Figures, I probably won't be around anyway, right? How much does it cost to put your name on the building? $250,000. It's all, I'll do it. Okay. But after all, you know, his kids are all older, out of the house, he has no expenses, so he can use his savings for that. Then he dies. The kids are looking at $250,000. They could use that money. But then it comes along the bad guy, the rabbi. He says, you know, I was talking with your dad, and he pledged that he wants the shul named. He was going to name it after his parents. Now that he died, it'll be so great. We'll name it after him. Rabbi, should have gotten that check. Can the kids get out of it or not? So the Rambam discusses this. And the Rambam says in such a case, the children must fulfill the pledge to tzedakah. Now that case is a case... Correct. So the Magid Mishnah says on that Rambam that that's even true about davar she'lo bo li'olam, that it's all the same kind of question. And he broadens it. But the Stechemed quotes once again from our friend the Knesset HaGdolot, who we quoted originally, who argues on all of this, argues on the Mibin Leiv, argues on the Rambam, that you don't say, on the Magid Mishnah, you don't say mitzvah l'kayim on something that is a davar she'lo bo li'olam or davar she'en bo mamash, etc. So, there's a very beautiful set of Sfarim. I'm not sure if they're popular locally in the local yeshivas, but in my yeshivas are very popular, known as the Pri Moshe. If I'm not mistaken, we finally figured out who he was. I believe somebody told me that he's a Shlomo Yishuv Ponovich. But yet, there was, I believe the one who discovered, at least in my circle of friends, was a fellow named Rabbi David Browski, who at the time was learning in the Gush. And somehow there became this friendship between this Hezder Talmud and the Shlomo Yishuv and the Ponovich. And he somehow made this forum popular in the Gush and spread through the Hezdu Yeshivas and eventually got back to YU. And he's like 6 or 7 Sfarim. And he writes these Lomdusha Sfarim, his name is Moshe Siegel, all these Lomdusha Sfarim. And again, they're all based on thematic topics. Binyan Shomrim, Binyan Gzela Gzela, Binyan Bris Mila. And he also has a big fat volume just on Inyan Kinyan. I mean, each essay is on a different Kinyan. Again, all the Lomdusha Raid, the big Chakira, it's, again, it's a very fundamental sefer. To zero in on what the fundamental issue is. So on the Pri Moshe on Kinyanim, in Siman Lamed, he discusses mitzvah l'kayim d'remes. Again, if you're not familiar with these Sfarim, and you, I don't know if you can get them in America so often, but you can certainly get them in Eretz Yisrael. They're very, very beautiful Sfarim if you like this kind of learning, if you like these Lamdash Chakiras. So the Pri Moshe quotes this Machlokas, and he says, perhaps this goes back to the original big question which we started with. Namely, that if all it is a mitzvah, so if it's a mitzvah to listen to your father, if that's the essence, it's a mitzvah to you, so why should it matter if it's davar she'lo bo li'olam, if it's davar she'en bo mamish? What's the difference? It only makes sense to start making those distinctions if we're talking about the world of kinyanim. In the world of kinyanim, we have formal rules about what does a kinyan apply to. A kinyan can't be chal on something that doesn't even yet exist. There's no such thing as a kinyan d'Rosh HaVayolam. So if mitzvah l'kayim d'Rameis is a kinyan, so then that's what the Knesset HaGdola l'shitaso holds. Therefore, it's not going to apply on d'Rosh HaVayolam. But if all it is a mitzvah to fulfill and to follow through on the father's wishes, so then that would be sufficient.
Whether the father says, I want you, i.e. the children, to do something, or whether the father says, I want this to be done. You know, like the case of giving the money for building the shul. The father didn't say to the kids to do it, the father said to do it, therefore it has more tokef, and maybe is under a different category. Maybe
if he didn't say to the kids, it's stronger?
He said, I'm pledging.
He had already done it to.
I'm pledging $250,000.
Right.
It's different than saying I want you to give $250,000.
Okay, perhaps. Okay, that's a good chiluk. Perhaps. I'm not sure which direction it would cut, but either way, it is definitely a good chiluk. We're almost out of time, so I'm going to skip a number of the other nafkaminas that I was planning on discussing. But just so you should know, there is a whole, I was alluding to this, but again, I think we've ran out of time. There's a whole discussion in the Rishonim, for those who are interested. It's in Baba Basra. This is, again, the end of Baba Basra is all the Yerusha sugyas, and it's on Daf Kuf Mem Tesam at Beis. There's a Tosfos in Iran, a Rashbam, etc., all in Baba Basra, all about the relationship between this whole idea and Divrei Shchiv Meira, or the way the question is asked. If you have the idea of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, why do you need the idea of divrei shchiv meira? And in that context, there's some very interesting points that are made. That's where the idea of shlish was mentioned, but we're not going to have time to get into that. Let me just close with a quick sum up, because I think it just has some nice implications in a broader sense. Just to review again, we mentioned that there's these opinions, the Shmuz Yaakov and the Taj Beits, who all hold that this whole idea, at least in the formal sense, is limited to... Hello. Is limited to anyone who wants to give money. B'chaim, the shul needs a new chair. Is limited to money. Mitzvah kandir remes. You know, you can. You know, let's say Lamashal, the father looks over. He says, "You know, I really want you to get along better with your sister." You know, it was one of my great sorrows that my brother and sister were never so close. You know, I really want you to take care of whatever. So. Might be the right thing to do, might be the wrong thing to do, but the Taj Beis says there's no mitzvah, there's no chiv on a person to do such a thing. That is not mitzvah like Kandir Meis. The Taj Beis actually has a very strong lashon, where he basically says, just because you're dying, you're not a melech, and you're not a navi, and you don't get to order people's life around. Again, the one side of this, again, in the nicer sense, is a very beautiful sense of legacy and perpetuation and father's wishes. But there are other cases which can be much nastier in the other direction, where, you know, they were controlling the life and they're going to reach out from the grave and they're going to teach you, you know. So there can be, so perhaps the balance that the Taj Beit suggests is that distinction, that they, their money, which you may be inheriting, they can tell you, if they made it clear before they died, you have to listen to it, but beyond that, you can't. It seems, though, that there are many Mefarshim who seem to, again, I'm not talking about extreme or abusive situations, every case needs its own perhaps Shaila. But in the broadest sense of do you just limit it to money or not, l'chaora, it seems like a lot of people disagree. For example, the Medrash that we started with that connects it to our Parsha, right? It has nothing to do with money. Right? Yaakov tells the kids they got to go bury him in Yisrael. That's not money. You came late. Sorry, that's what we discussed. I don't mean to pick on you, but that's what we started with the need for that shuah. That's exactly how we started this year. But nevertheless...
Joey mentioned it's a financial obligation.
What? The Kfura?
To bury him in Eretz Yisrael. It's a financial obligation.
Maybe it would have cost them, maybe it wouldn't have. Maybe they would have used his, you know, I don't know if it would have cost them. I don't know if it would have cost them, right? I don't know, yeah, they had a plot. It was a schlep. Again, it's reminiscent of the famous Reb Chaim. Again, the question was asked before, do you have to spend money on Kibbutz Av Aim? So the answer is you don't. And the famous story they tell over is from Reb Chaim, that the person came over to him and says, my parents live, you know, the other part of Europe, so, you know, they want me to visit them, but the halacha is you don't have to pay for Kibbutz Av Aim, so I don't have to go. I don't have to pay by train ticket to go visit them because you're right. You got to walk. So this again, the boys had to listen to Yaakov, but the question is whether this mitzvah l'kayim, perhaps it's a broader idea. And I just want to end with again a parallel to this where this might be relevant. There's a very famous Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis that discusses the idea of a hesped. What is the role of a hesped? Is it Yikara Chaim or the Char the Shkiva? Is it the purpose? Is it to show kavod to the one who died? Or is it to bring kavod or to bring comfort to those who are living to the Avelim? We paskin, it's for the deceased. And therefore, if the person expresses before he dies that he does not want a hesped, you're supposed to listen to him. And furthermore, the Sma says that it's not just that you're supposed to listen to him. It's usur to give a hesped in a case where the person didn't want one, because it is a contravention of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. Because there's kavod haTorah, it's not his, right? Okay, that's right. Okay. So I just want to conclude by mentioning something I think interesting, again, which relates a little bit to this whole idea of control and other things and this hesped idea, and that is that the Minchas Usher says, perhaps, you know, there's so many examples where you see it being applied non-monetarily. What could the Tashbetz, what could the Shvus Yaakov have meant to say? It's just limited to money. So he suggests something very interesting. He says it's not a hard and fast, you know, it's the money, stupid, to paraphrase a recent president. It's not money versus everything else. It's not true. Right? That's not our hashkafa. Rather, perhaps what they were expressing is that the mitzvah of kandivar mace is only relevant to things that are shayich to the mace. It's his money. And again, I engage with Minchas Usher and others have very beautiful explanations, again, very significant, about how it's ethical mishpat, ha-emes, and tzedek, and everything. The people's money, their financial legacy, should go where they want it to go. So he says, that's their money. Whether they should have a hesped or not, whether they should be buried, that's all stuff that's shayach to them. So if they've expressed the desire, there's a mitzvah to try to fulfill that. But things that have nothing to do with them, they're about your life, or they're about strangers' lives, so that, he says, perhaps that's what they meant. They didn't just mean money versus everything else. They would also agree that the hesped and everything else, you should listen to them, and that could still be because of mitzvah, because the idea is, again, things that are shayach to them, so then you should try to fulfill that. But things that have nothing to do with them, again, whether you get along with your sister or not, or, you know, I always thought that the bar mitzvah should be in Israel. You should make a bar mitzvah. You should go to Israel to the bar mitzvah. Okay, if you want, no good. But there's no, that's already not, that's beyond them. So how you deal with that when they were alive is a different issue. But once they died, so then, when you're there, you make the speech, you know that they're here and they're smiling down on us. But you don't have to. But you don't have to listen. Perhaps that's the middle ground to be reached in the Shita. Just a technical note: Emirat Hashem, this coming Thursday, I'll be in Eretz Yisrael, so I will not be giving with some of you here. So I will not be giving a satellite hookup. Got to speak to Mike Smith about that.